So,
hello.
Listen back to the Sprints podcast.
Yeah.
I thought it did very well.
You did all right. Come on. Bloody big head over here. Here, tell me this, mate. I heard you're playing a festival or something last week. Like a virtual festival.
Yeah. It for the Great Escape. Great Escape Online. Yeah, I think it went okay.
What a great escape it was.
That you didn't see it.
No, mate, I don't have the internet. They tried to sell it to me. I said, flip on. Flip right just, on, mate.
You're just right.
Yeah.
Are you going to play us something?
Why would you think that?
Because you have a bass in your hand.
Yeah, you know, I did the keyboard last week. I thought this week, well, let's do like a bass guitar. Let's go. That kind of thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like if okay, name a scenario. And I'll play a bass guitar scenario for you.
Name a scenario, okay.
Yeah.
Going across the desert.
Oh, I'm so thirsty. Oh, I just wish I had some water in this fucking desert. Yeah, that sort of thing.
I was there. I was in the Sahara. Do you know what apparently went well last week, according to Dead Rabbit, was the intro? They thought that the two chords you could play provided a nice bed, for the intro for Sprints. So,
will we try and do one? Yeah.
Yeah, well, do you want to try to do one for Fontaines?
Yeah, okay.
Fontaines are an Irish post-punk band formed in Dublin in 2017.
Yeah, I don't think this is working, mate.
Why don't you do the intro in your... Okay. Why don't you just do the intro?
Hello, people. Welcome to the show. Welcome to episode 2, and here we go. We've got a band for you to listen to. They're called Fontaines, DC. They're the best in the biz. They come from Dublin. Is that right, Connor?
I think it is.
There's 5 of them in the band. Is that right, Connor?
I can confirm.
They've got some acclaimed records. Is that correct, Connor?
At least 2.
2 acclaimed records in the band. I hope they will hold my hand. I hope Connor isn't wrong when he says he likes my song. And that's the end.
I thought that was really good. That was much better than my attempt earlier.
Well, that's why he brought me on, isn't it?
What's your favourite Fontaines DC song?
It's probably, can I play it for you? I don't know the name of it. It's like, goes like, Stacey's mom has got going on. She's all I need and I've wanted her for so long. Baby, can't you see you're just not the girl for me? La 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 la, but la 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 la, Stacey's mom.
So that's not Fontaines DC, that's Fountains of Wayne. Completely different band.
Yeah, but now it goes, Stacey's mom has got to go.
Well, I think I'm getting the tune. I'm definitely getting the tune of Stacey's Mom by Fountains of Wayne. But
have you heard it, yeah?
Yeah.
It's good, like, right?
Yeah, it was good. It was good shit. But no, this band's called Fontaines DC.
Have you ever met a mum as sexy as Stacey's mum in the song?
I don't think I've ever met a mum who's inspired me to write a song.
Is so your mum sexy? That's good. That's good. It's nice to have a sexy mum, isn't it? Anyway. Okay, I've decided it's time to start the show, so get yourself ready, right? Pour yourself a bloody big whiskey, double or a triple, mate. Get ready for season... hold on. Get ready for episode 2 with Fontaines DC. I'm Tom Cole. To be the one and all. To be there waiting. Like that? Liquid
Talk about the music in your life. Awkward Chords.
So we are here with Tom Call from Fontaines DC. Thanks a million for joining us, man. Especially appreciate it considering you're a few days removed from the Brit Awards, and imagine there were a few refreshments close at hand for that.
There certainly was. Yeah, it was a heavy night now, so yeah, I needed a day of buffer time for sure. But yeah,
no problem. Batteries recharged. And
absolutely.
I was watching the NME interview you did, and you're on the carpet, and you're standing on like the right hand side, and you look like you're looking very dapper, I may add. And it looks like you're just kind of, I don't know, I was thinking, were you taking it all in and being like, this is amazing, or are you just kind of used to all of that now? Like, just, I guess, you know, is it still surreal to be in those situations?
Absolutely. I think it's like, I think you'd never really get used to those things. They're so like the whole like red carpet press circuit is such a weird thing, and I absolutely hate it. I'm just kind of the guy at the back, like, nodding along and laughing at the right times. Yeah, it's a strange thing, man. I don't think you can ever really get used to it. It's kind of odd. It's very unnatural in that, like, it's so like quick, and you're supposed to be all witty and on it, which isn't really us, really. Yeah, I suppose we've done it a few times now, so I kind of know what to expect. But yeah, it is still weird.
Yeah, I'm sure. You actually made reference to that in the one of the guys did about having you're just thankful that you're so naturally witty and funny that you can just give quick remarks.
Yeah, it's such an unnatural thing. But yeah, I think some of the lads are getting used to it, and they're better at it than me. So.
You stand there and look cool. That's and like that's on the back of the Grammy nomination. And you guess you'd never think of that sort of stuff when you're actually recording.
No, absolutely. I feel like the whole thing of the Grammy thing was just such a different world that we never thought we'd be in ever. So actually hearing the news that, you know, we're nominated for it was such a weird thing. But yeah, I feel like if people are writing music to be aimed at those kind of things, it's kind of for the wrong reasons. So
I doubt there's many that get through that net. If you're intentionally trying to write for the Grammys, I don't think you've much of a chance. But it's been amazing, and especially I think when a band from such a small country as Ireland, you know, makes it makes it to an event like that, and is becoming so well known for great music. You know, I think everybody kind of goes with you on that, and, you know, everybody's delighted to see that you're doing well. The thing that struck me with yourselves is how you came together. So for people that don't know, the five of you all attended BIM.
Yeah, we did.
In Dublin. Yeah. And I just thought it was interesting, the fact that, you know, I was reading in interviews that the formation of the band didn't necessarily come out of shared musical interest, but more the fact that you had similar interests in relation to poetry and writing. Like, how did that kind of come about? Would that have been in class, you know, or if you were out on the beers, like, would you have just been chatting about it? Were you friends first before you became a band?
Yeah, I mean, like, I feel like so, like, obviously all met in college, and we were kind of all mates kind of from the get-go. But it was an interesting thing going to music college, is that you're surrounded by people who are all insanely talented at what they do, and we weren't really that good at playing our instruments, or, you know, I feel like we kind of bonded over the fact that it was kind of we wanted to write a little bit with more feeling and more of a punk attitude, I suppose, because sometimes when you go to art college, it's very like, I feel like for us, a lot of it was kind of based, like, a lot of the bands in art college were very like neo-soul, very musical-y stuff, which is like, but like, I'm not able to play that kind of stuff. So we kind of, we were mates, and we kind of started a band in first year, and we were kind of just like messing around with like three chords and trying to write like punky Beatlesy tunes. But yeah, I suppose the poetry thing was kind of an extracurricular thing for us, because I feel like Yeah, I feel like the whole thing in music college as well is that there's an awful lot of importance placed on like being a commercial band or being like, I don't know, the kind of the tricks to songwriting. And we just found that a little bit false, to be honest. So a few of the lads got really into like the beat poetry and stuff like that, which is like the most stereotypical like second year in college thing. It was an amazing experience as well. So we kind of, yeah, I feel like it was very much an extracurricular thing of like when we were out just having a few beers and kind of sitting around, we'd be writing a line and passing the book and somebody else would write another line, and it kind of grew from that. And yeah, we ended up putting out a little book of like poetry that we like self-published and stuff, and put on a night in Workman's, and it kind of, yeah, that was the kind of the marker of the time.
I thought that was fascinating. There were two, one called Vroom and one called Winding, was it? And do you ever think about maybe revisiting that and kind of reinterpreting that song based form?
I don't know, I feel like people have kind of have said that to us, and it's an interesting idea, but I feel kind of false doing it, because I was kind of into writing poetry and reading poetry an awful lot at that time in my life, but now I kind of just don't do it anymore. And I feel like, I don't know, I feel like it'd have to come around again that I was actually writing myself. But it'd be, I feel like it'd be cool to put it out as just like, just to have it.
So what that, it was.
Yeah, just to have it so it could live somewhere. But yeah, I think there was only like 20 or 30 copies of it, and who knows where they are right now. So they're on, it's on some PDF file somewhere, but yeah.
Yeah, that actually terrifies me, that idea of passing my poetry on to a bandmate. Just imagine them taking out a big red pen. He's obviously have things in common, and he's very confident around each other. Do you remember the first time, or the first song that you wrote together, where you felt like, okay, wow, this feels like really good. This feels different to what, you know, maybe the bands just were in prior.
I suppose. Yeah, like we were all kind of in bands and kind of doing stuff in college that was outside of Fontaine stuff. But Green kind of brought maybe like three or four songs at the very start, and it was a really exciting thing for us. But he wrote like Hurricane Laughter, maybe in like, it was probably like 2017, and we were living in a gaff on Thomas Street together, and he showed me this demo that he'd written, and I was like, this is like, it wasn't really anything that we'd written before. It was really crowdy and kind of very like very fall inspired at the time, and yeah, it was, that was a big change, like turning point of kind of like, I suppose we were all listening to like girl band as well, so that whole idea of being a little bit more experimental rather than maybe more melody based, you know. But yeah, I feel like that was the turning point, and then a lot of the first record kind of came from that. That idea or that genesis of a song.
And did you feel like your experience, not to put Bim on the spot here, but did you feel like did you learn, like, you know, you're saying you kind of, you were, when you started, you were fighting against those music industry, like that thinking of becoming successful as an artist, but did any of that help you in like how you released your first song and how you planned things and marketed things?
Probably, man. Like, to be honest, it probably did help. But I have kind of a love-hate relationship with the idea of like art college, is that you can't go to art college and learn how to be an artist. You kind of have to, you can learn things around that, of course. But it probably did help with the whole kind of a broad overview of how the music industry worked. But I'd say our manager, Trev, we started working with him. He used to book in the Workman's, so we started working with him very early on, and he was the kind of the driving force of actually planning things and making sure stuff was right, more than him probably.
Okay.
Like, not to downplay Bim, but that's where we all met, and you know.
Yes, of course, it was the genesis for everything.
Yeah. If it wasn't for that, we wouldn't be a band either. So
you've done so much in 2 years, you know, obviously Doggerel, and then, you know, you've obviously been nominated for the second album for these awards, and from what I understand from the NME interview, you have yeah. your third album finished and mixed. Are you allowed to say where you recorded that or anything? Or
I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah, we've been working on it. I think NME let a load of stuff through, so I don't know what I can say and what I can't say, but
okay.
We've been working on it for the last maybe 6 months. Well, yeah, since like October last year.
Okay.
So yeah, it's really exciting. It's good to, I feel like the whole lack of gigs really did focus us into like writing and being like getting into a good writing every day, you know. So
I don't want to ask you too much about the third album. What would you say the difference between you personally in terms of your plan and as a drummer, do you think your progression from Doggerel to Hero's Death, do you feel like you changed anything, or you know, was there any like new reference point that you kind of tried to implement in the second album?
Definitely. I feel like from a personal point of view, the first album was very much even like physically, I just wanted to play as loud as I possibly could and be like really straight up, fourth floor grooves, like, and just be really loud. Whereas the second record was a little bit more introspective, and it felt like I had to change gears a lot personally to, like, you know, playing for the song is a really important thing. So I think I had to kind of learn how to be a little bit more subtle, maybe.
Yeah.
I feel like that was definitely a big part of it. I feel like the whole process of doing the second record was kind of weird, because we went to LA to do it in the end of like 2019, I think. Went to LA and worked with a producer over there, and it didn't really work out. So we ended up scrapping that whole session, and we had to go back and re-record it in January. So I think the kind of the finished product of that record is kind of like, it was a funny thing because a lot changed for me personally, the way I looked at the tunes between the first go and the second go. So I feel like each album that we do, I'm definitely going to have a different outlook on my playing, for sure, which is, I think that's important.
For sure. It's really interesting, that idea, but you know, with the initially recording something, that many artists get another chance to go in and do something again. And
oh, of course, yeah.
And what a amazing, you know, such a learning process. It's always difficult, this stuff, but was there an expectation on yourselves that it had to be a certain thing, or what do you think it didn't work out?
I mean, definitely. I think there's, I think the producers that we worked with and the studio were kind of like, they were kind of like big names. We did it in like Sunset Sound, which is like this really old school, like Hollywood studio, like the Beach Boys and the Doors and the Stones all recorded there. And we were really excited. We were like, oh my God, we got like have this opportunity to go and record in this amazing place. But when we got there, I don't know, I feel like personally, I had a lot of this like imposter syndrome kind of thing, being like, I'm this lad from Mayo, like just in this like amazing studio, what am I actually doing here? Like, I don't really deserve to be here. And we were there, and like Justin Timberlake was like coming in and out of the studio. Like, what the hell is going on? So I feel like there was an awful lot of pressure put on ourselves, which was a big learning curve. I feel like it didn't work out with the producer as well. Maybe it was like a different outlook. But yeah, I'm really happy that we went back and did it again. We went to the same guy who did the first record, Dan Carey. So we did that in London in like January 2020. And it was like such a nice feeling, because we did it in his gaff. So it was like getting back to the same place that we did the first record. And it was like, okay, this is cool. This is like,
we know.
Yeah, this is like comfortable playing field. Yeah. But yeah, it was a great learning curve. I feel like I know how not to make a record now, which is, you know.
Yeah, you mentioned Justin Timberlake. I'm not saying Soul Wax is as massive. Yeah. It's Justin Timberlake, but pretty massive. What did you think about the remix?
I loved it. I'm such a Soul Wax fan. They have that tune, It's Always Binary, I think. The track that I heard, I remember hearing it when I was in college, and I was like, the drumming on this is absolutely nuts. So I really got into them, and our manager Trev is kind of like a big like dance music fan as well. So I was really excited when they asked to remix it. So yeah, I thought they did a really cool job. I feel like I'm not super into like disco music, but they did it like so tastefully. It's really,
yeah. That's brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really interesting how that opens. You know, how maybe their fan base have been opened up to us as well. I think it's like such a nice thing. But yeah,
no, it was great. It was so not what I expected it to be.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. But you just thought it was great.
I thought it was really interesting from what they took. They kind of like took a lot of the like a lot of the stuff that was buried in the track and really brought it to the forefront. Mm-hmm. A lot of the like harmony, actually playing the kind of the chords in the song, and yeah, I thought their like arrangement skills are just next level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That brings us on to the next part of this I want to do. So we tend to ask artists to maybe just talk about it, two or three of their influence, or even songs that, you know, they remember having an impact on them. And, you know, it can be recent or, you know, early days. But do you have any top of your head, anything you've been listening to recently, or indeed anything that's just always been a constant source of influence for you?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose like, something that I always keep coming back to is the Velvet Underground's album VU. It's like an album of like B-sides and rarities, and it's just this it's just this amazing piece. It's kind of like, I think it's from just I think it came out in like the early 80s, which was like, yeah, it's just such an amazing piece of work for a band to have so many like absolutely incredible albums, and that their B-sides album can be this strong. It's just full of like, that's such a statement for a band, I think. So that's something that that's a record that I keep coming back to. I feel like I have really strong memories of that as well. I was in like New York for the first time, and I was just listening to that walking around for like a whole day, and I was just listening to it on repeat all the time. And it was just like, yeah, I feel a big affinity to that record, and it kind of brings me back to New York, and obviously that's such a Velvet city. So
yeah,
I think that's really special. In terms of new stuff that I'm listening to, I've been listening to loads of Kneecap recently, which I'm like, go on, the boys, like amazing. They're sick. Like, I feel like I've been getting into a bit of hip hop recently, which is totally not my world, really. Yeah, I don't know. That's been really interesting. It's kind of a whole new thing that I never really got mad into. So like, yeah, I'm listening to like loads of Outkast as well, which is so not a Fontaines thing, but yeah. I absolutely love Outkast. These days. It's class.
Yeah, I think that especially for you and like, you know, your drumming style and the rhythms and like the counter rhythms and how that could be. You know, that could be interesting for you going down the line, you know, in terms of like, is there anything in those genres that you can implement in what you're playing, you know, the guitar based sort of music?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like with the kind of the music that we're working on now, it's I've been taking loads of inspiration from kind of like breakbeaty drum and bass stuff. I've been listening to like loads of Ronnie Size and Prodigy, obviously, and like Goldie and all these people. And it's like, that's like such an exciting thing for me of like, replicating like breakbeats on a kind of organic drum kit. I think that's like such a cool thing. So
that'll be interesting. Yeah. You're not getting the 808 out anytime soon though.
I actually got a 707 last week. So
all right, okay. Interesting. Maybe album 4 then.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's been cool, man. That's been my new thing now. I feel like I'm really getting into drum and bass, which is like such not a guitar-y thing to do, but yeah. I'm really, really, really excited about that style of drumming now.
Class. I don't know, Peter, is there any way we could hear some of the stuff that Tom's talking about?
I'm still here, guys. Hey, Tom, how you doing? I'm Peter. I don't know any Velvet Underground, but I learned an Outkast song for you because I heard you like Outkast.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it goes, my baby don't mess around because she loves me so, and this I know for sure. But does she really want to? Just can't stand to see me walk out the door. Hey, yeah. Hey, yeah.
Beautiful.
It's a bit low for me, that one.
That's beautiful. That's lovely. It's a lovely rendition.
Thank you very much, Tom. I appreciate that. That is such the highest compliment of all compliments.
That's going into your next press release. That's Peter is a resident musician here at Liquid Chords.
Our musical director. Get it right.
Musical director, sorry.
Get the title right. Come on.
Ignorant. How ignorant of me. No, so that it's been great to have you, man. We were just chatting earlier about future plans, and you've got something really exciting in relation to music, and it's the launch of your own label.
Yeah. I've been kind of working on it over the last while. I kind of got this idea. For the first lockdown, I ended up moving back home to Mayo, and I ended up living with my ma for 3 months, which was so not what I was expecting to do, but it was such an amazing experience. It was back in Mayo, nothing was happening. I was out in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of mountains. I feel something about just being at home, it got me really into listening to trad music again. So, I kind of came up with the idea of putting together a little compilation, because I feel it's really hard to find trad music that's on vinyl kind of these days. So, yeah, I came up with a little idea to resurrect my label. I'm putting together a little record, and it's going to be cool, man. It's going to be cool. It's going to, I feel it's kind of old and new trad music. So there's loads of Bothy Band and Dervish and kind of older stuff. And then Lisa O'Neill and a few people that are kind of a little bit more modern. So yeah, I'm really excited about it. It should be out end of the summer. So.
That is exciting. Lisa herself, she's just such an amazing artist. Just that's always
amazing voice.
It's insane. Yeah. And in terms of Fontaines, it's strange because she's actually, did you even get to tour any of the Salkin album?
Not at all, man. We did Brixton Academy in February 2020. So we did I think a few songs off the second record were out at that stage. So we played four of them. And then obviously everything shut down after that. And then the record came out in July. So we haven't really got a chance to tour it at all. There's been loads of live streams and stuff, which has been cool. But, they're not the same really. Hopefully October time, we've got a big UK tour coming up. So
exciting.
Fingers crossed that happens.
Yeah. Actually, the clock has struck. I actually have a live stream going out now, but it isn't live.
So no way.
You present that I'll be playing tonight at 7:30. I'm sitting talking to you. But I can't wait to see his live. Actually, never been able to catch his. He's playing the Ulster Hall, I think.
Yeah.
Last year, the end of 2019, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Such an amazing gig, man. I loved Ulster Hall so much.
You know, I heard a few of my friends went and they were just waxing lyrical about it for so long. So I can't wait to see his live. And thank you so much for doing this, Tom. Been really a pleasure to talk to you.
Absolutely pleasure to chat to you too, man.
Yeah, and you get some whiskey out to you soon. Some more whiskey out to you soon. I'm sure you're sick of the stuff.
No, I absolutely love it, man. Great stuff. It's great stuff. It kept me going for a big lockdown period, so it was lovely.
good. All right, man. Good chatting. Thank you.
Thank you very much, man.
Please on the heater clock.
What a lovely guy.
What a nice man.
Yeah.
You know, the thing that I liked about him the most is that he gave me a compliment.
That's the thing I liked about him least.
I also thought he was quite a stylish man. I liked his shirt and his jacket. You never dress up for this show. You never put any effort in, mate.
I know. Well, did you notice it didn't bring up lockdown once? I didn't ask a question.
Fucking God for that. I'm sick of this lockdown rubbish. Every 5 minutes, lockdown. Oh, what about it? What did you think about the... Do you remember that there was a lockdown?
I just think it's a very relevant topic for musicians. No, I'm feeling good. I'm feeling good about season 2. I think they've been two really good episodes.
Don't feel too good, right? Keep it a medium. Otherwise, you'll slack off, you know? That's how I've got such big muscles. When I look in the mirror, I always think, oh, it could be bigger. It's
massive.
It's a mental thing.
You're so swole.
I'm a swollen boy.
You're a big swole boy.
Big. I'm like a grape. Like a turgid grape in the night.
It is a pretty massive band. Tom is, well, Tom's not a band, but...
He's the backbeat. He's the backbone of the band.
The spine, yeah. Who just is the spine of this podcast, me or you?
I'm like the V, you know, the V that goes down to the penis of a hot man's lower waist,
like Brad Pitt in Fight Club.
That's what I am, okay. And I'm the big muscly part.
Okay. And I'm just the.
You're the flabby undergarment. I'm sorry, I don't mean to be rude or anything.
No,
I'm just calling it like I see it.
Yeah, that's what you're paid to do.
We should see if we could get nominated for one of those awards.
Yeah, it's pure, it's easy done.
Do you just have to fill in a form or?
Yeah, yeah. And like record a song, I think.
I'll record a bloody song right now. I've got my bass guitar out. Have you seen it?
Oh, yeah, it's
this
beautiful.
Is a Paul McCartney bass, but I don't know who that is.
He was in the Beatles.
Where's he from?
Liverpool.
Paul from Liverpool. This song goes out to you, Paul.
He was a big fan of the show.
I wish I was a little bit taller. I wish I was smaller. I wish I was a man in the Beatles with a game. And then I'll play guitar. It's the bass guitar. It's Paul McCartney's bass guitar.
Beautiful tribute.
Completely original song.
Yeah, I like that bass line.
Oh, I wish I was a little bit taller. Wish I was smaller. Wish I had a girl I could call her. Hold on a second. Maybe that is a song. Oh, yeah. Wish I would.
It's actually made me realize that's a sample. That the bass is a sample from Fleetwood Mac, isn't it?
No. I think it's originally from Flip.
Was it a Kimball Berrien artist?
Hey girl, take a walk on the wild side.
Oh, Lou Reed, yeah.
My name is Lou Reed and I like to rap. I like to sing songs and I got a nice hat. Lou Reed is my name. Lou Reed is my game. That's probably enough.
Do you think?
Yeah. I'll see you next week.